From award-winning and New York Times bestselling Christopher Buckley comes a very funny, sure-to-be-controversial novel about U.S.-China relations. In They Eat Puppies, Don't They? No sacred cow is left unslaughtered, and no one, the Dalai Lama, Chris Matthews, the U.S. defense industry, lobbyists, activists, neocons, raging liberals, and even Henry Kissinger, is left unblemished. It is a great pleasure, as always, to welcome Christopher Buckley to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us, sir. I appreciate it.
Happy to be with you. I don't think you left anyone out of that list.
I tried not to. Actually, I left Civil War reenactors out.
You did. You did. And I, as a matter of fact, I noticed a big gaping hole in the litany, but I forgive you for it.
Not a problem.
I would point out that my old buddy Chris Matthews is described on the cast of characters page at the beginning of the book as a, quote, taciturn TV host. So you know it's a novel, right?
You know it's a novel. I read this novel Monday, Tuesday, and I just loved it. It's absolutely terrific. It's hilarious. And I'm a great fan of your work. I find it difficult to talk about your novels because they are so... You don't want to give stuff away, obviously. And there's so much going on, and you deliver a punchline much better than certainly I could in describing it. But what brought you to this particular subject?
Well, it started out, I started writing it maybe 2.5 years ago, and I wanted to write a book about the military-industrial complex. I think you're too young to remember President Eisenhower's farewell address to the nation in 1960, but remember, he warned us about the military-industrial complex,
right.
Remember?
Right.
And now here we have a defense budget of $700 billion, which is larger, by the way, than the defense budgets of the next highest 14 countries combined. And it sort of morphed from there into a book about U.S.-China relations. I finished it a year ago, and I would like to thank our Commander-in-Chief, President Obama, for 2 weeks ago introducing the subject of canine cuisine onto the national menu. Very nice of him to help promote the book.
Very fortuitous.
Very fortuitous. Well, it's, you know, writing satire in America today is probably a pointless proposition, because you're inevitably in a losing competition with tomorrow's USA front page of USA Today. But anyway, upward with the arts, as they say.
USA Today, in and of itself, a satire.
Well, the question one could legitimately ask is there any point in satire? But then you see the brilliant work of people like Jon Stewart, Stephen Colbert, and P.J. O'Rourke, and Andy Borowitz, and there are a lot of them. And I guess this gives us hope for the potential of satire there. But we do. America does seem to manufacture a lot of it on its own, doesn't it?
Well, and obviously you have to include your name on that list of great satirists who have done an incredible job. Thank You for Smoking is one of my favorite books of all time. It's a brilliant novel. This book is incredible.
I must say you're in a very good mood today.
Well, thank you very much.
A very gentle mood.
Well, you put me in a good mood, because I love reading this kind of stuff, because it's fun, it's snarky, it's just enjoyable. I don't know if you like that word, snarky, but... That is a tone.
Well, I try not to be. I'm not saying I'm always successful at it, I suppose. there's a bit of a divide between skepticism, if you will, and cynicism. I try to stay on the, you know, on the skeptical side of the line. There are satirists much more able than myself who draw blood, you know, who really, you know, draw blood by the buckets. That's not what I do.
Well, it is not what you do, but you certainly make your point. And going back to the comment that you made earlier about satire, of what is the point in satire anymore, when you read a book like this, you sort of realize why you should do it, because it is a nice little tap on the shoulder to tell you what's going on and realize that we're not that far from it.
Well, it's, I suppose, another way, just a It's a way of processing. I tend to write about things that vex me or annoy me. That the book you alluded to very very nicely, Thank You for Smoking, grew out, which I wrote, well, gosh, a while ago. It was about a tobacco industry lobbyist in Washington, and the impetus for that book was watching, I think one night, as I still call it, the McNeil Lair news hour.
Right, as do I.
Now called something else, but they had
the news hour.
The news hour. On they had on someone. It was really funny. They had on a scientist, you know, with at least three PhDs after his name, who was on to talk about the latest evidence that cigarette smoking was hello bad for you, and they had on. It's funny to me, even 20 years later. They had on a woman from something called the Tobacco Institute, which I didn't even know existed, but they were the cigarette company lobby here in Washington. And her job, she's very attractive, and her job, every time this guy said something, the scientist said, and everything he said was scientific and had the word, enzyme in it. Her job was to look at him as though he had just come out and declared that aliens had landed on the Washington Mall, and go, oh, come on, you don't expect us to believe that, do you? And I fell in love. I became fascinated. I thought, wow, this lady gets up in the morning, brushes her teeth, kisses the kids goodbye, has her grape nuts, and then goes off and sells death all day for a living. So anyway, that was my first Washington scoundrel novel, I suppose. And now, in the course of 20 years, I've moved from tobacco lobbyist to defense lobbyist. I don't know if that's progress, but I suppose it's a kind of living.
But it does show us the type of mechanism that is in place and how strong public relations, this lobbying is, not only in Washington, but for us as a whole. When you look at the situation in China, what was it that you wanted to explore?
We have an odd symbiotic or codependent relationship with China. As a matter of fact, in the book I invent something called the U.S.-China Codependency Council.
Right.
There's a very attractive woman named Winnie Chang who's the head of it. Part of the book was an attempt, and a small one, most of my attempts being fairly, fairly small, to sort of examine our relationship with China. Are we friends? Are we enemies? Are we frenemies? As you saw very vividly from the events of the last couple of weeks in Beijing, the blind activist who fled from house arrest to the U.S. Embassy and all that, it's a very delicate balance we have. China is essentially paying our national mortgage by lending us the money. In return, we are the market for China's goods. But one of the ironies with respect to this book, you might say, is that some of the money that we're borrowing from China to finance our national debt is going into developing weapons and military systems aimed at protecting us from China. So we're borrowing money from China to build weapons to protect ourselves from China. You would think, is there something wrong with this picture? I think there probably is.
Probably.
I hope a few other people have noticed it. I'm sure they have. But anyway, it's America, dear America, manages to get itself into all these ironic positions.
When you set out to write something like this, I'm curious as to the process, because the chapters are relatively short, the pacing is very fast, and does that mean that as you said, you started 2 years ago and working on this, how long does it take for you to fine-tune that chapter so that there is that brisk moving pace?
Well, I rewrite and rewrite and rewrite and rewrite. One of the many reasons I'm grateful for word processing and computers is when I started out, it was typewriters. And
right.
Just the sheer physical labor involved in retyping a long manuscript tended to, you didn't want to do that endlessly. With computers and word processing, you can do it endlessly. I probably write 20 drafts of a book, by which I mean probably most paragraphs in the book have been rewritten like 20 times. And that, I came across, I don't know if any of your listeners are, or how many of them are writers or whatever, but I came across a marvelous quote recently by the French writer Antoine de Saint-Exupéry, who, of course, was the author of the book Le Petit Prince, The Little Prince. Remember,
right.
He was killed in World War II.
Yes.
And it's really quite a marvelous advice about writing. It said, it goes like this: perfection is not achieved when there is no longer anything more to add, but when there is no longer anything left to subtract.
Mm.
This is very good advice in writing. It's all about tightening, 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 tightening. You know, you start off with a big paragraph, and if you know, and you end up with a tight little paragraph. It's like any craft. You just have to sort of. And this is my 15th book, and I regret to tell those of your listeners who are fledgling writers, it doesn't get any easier.
Well, it's hard work. Yeah.
If anything, it seems to get harder and harder and harder.
But
anyway.
With a background in journalism, with a background in a deadline, and not to mention the genetics, does that make you a better writer, do you think?
It's hard to say. I do think that I started off in journalism, and it's very good discipline. I remember an editor, magazine editor, I was doing some freelance for very early on in my career, and I was saying to him, well, you know, I'll try to make it as good as I can. And he said, I don't need it good. I need it tomorrow. I think, you know, quite many novelists began as newspaper reporters, and I doubt any of them ever regretted having that training behind them. It's just jolly good discipline.
I'm interested always in the marketing of the book, because it's always said that it's sure to be controversial, and there's a line that says, with something to offend and amuse everyone.
Well, they, you know...
That's
honestly,
marketing.
That's...
Yeah, so...
You know, that's spin.
Well, when you...
You know, you can't blame them for doing it. I mean, you know, they're... there are better things to be controversial. I mean, that's how they talk.
Absolutely.
And God bless them for talking that way. And God bless them for talking that way about my book. And I could sit here and tell you, yes, this book is sure to stir deep controversy and bring China and America to the table. And maybe there'll even be a war over it. Unlikely. If it helps one or two readers who are, you know, on a 5-hour flight from New York to L.A., then I will have done my business. I think of myself as an entertainer, nothing more.
Well, that was the question I was going to ask you, because it certainly doesn't seem as this book does not have any political bent. If anything that you're going after, it is the culture of this. It is this lobbyist culture. It's the culture of Washington, which is the case in so many of your books, and just the folly of it all.
Yeah, that's probably a little bit of a sort of shooting fish in a barrel. It is, you know, it is also about China. I had to imagine scenes within the highest echelons of Chinese government, the so-called Politburo Standing Committee. Those are the nine men who rule China. That, to me, is I've done Washington in a number of books. You know, that part of the book was more interesting to me. But I worked at the White House many years ago, and first novel was about the White House, and I do find myself returning to that as a little bit of a theme, because it was, you know, it was a world I knew something about. But I think it's a book with a slightly wider canvas than just Washington.
Well, sure.
At least I hope it is.
No, absolutely. And China, in and of itself, being also big and unruly like our country, seems endlessly fascinating to explore.
China is, right now, China's probably topic A, although I'm hesitant to tell your listeners that there are other books out right now on China. Honesty compels me to say that I have on my desk about 10 books on China that have all come out really quite recently. One, which is actually quite a serious book by a very serious guy, is called Is America Becoming China's Bitch? You know, there are China Fear is...
Now that's a controversial
is
title.
Very much in the pipeline right now. So maybe my modest little book will be a little more entertaining than the, oh my God, we have to worry about China books.
Now that title is controversial.
But I emphasized it's a serious book. I didn't make up that title. It's you could find it on Amazon. but don't go to Amazon for that book.
No.
go to Amazon for They Eat Puppies.
Don't they?
Don't they? Or as many as some interviewers are saying, so you have a new book out, They Shoot Puppies, don't they?
How long did you work on the title? At what point did that come to you?
Titles are hard for me. Well, the whole thing is sort of hard for me, but I generally, titles take me a long time to come up. This is from a line of dialogue in the book.
Right.
One of the anti-China sentiment fomenters, who's a sort of an attractive Ann Coulterish kind of character, who runs a think tank in Washington called the Institute for Continuing Conflict, comes up with it on the Chris Matthews show, and my editor saw it and said, "There's our title." And I said, "Do you think so? Really?" He said, "Oh yes, yes, yes. We must have that as a title." So it's the title.
And so you have. It's They Eat Puppies, Don't They? It's a novel. It's out from 12. Christopher Buckley, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program. I thank you very much for being with us. Best of luck with the book.
Thanks for having me on.
Thank you very much. Again, Christopher Buckley is the author of They Eat Puppies, Don't They? It is published by 12. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.